Continuing with the third chapter of the Jiva Dharma. Okay, now after describing Varnashram, then now he goes into the description of the words eternal and temporary. Now let us consider how are the words nitya, eternal, and naimittika, temporary, used here with the word karma. If we consider the deep meaning of the scriptures, we will see that these two words do not refer to the supreme spiritual goal of life. The terms are used with ordinary or material meaning. Words like nitya karma, nitya tattva, and nitya sattva may be applied only to the soul's pure spiritual position. They cannot be used to refer to anything else. Therefore, when the word nitya is used to modify the word karma, that nitya karma, seemingly of the material world, indirectly refers to the eternal spiritual reality. The karma of the material world is never eternal. When karma is employed in karma yoga leads to the search for jnana, knowledge, and that search leads to bhakti, devotional service. Then that karma and jnana may be called nitya, because they lead to something that actually is nitya. Therefore, a Brahmin's chanting of the Gayatri Mantra is called a nitya karma, because even though it is an activity in relation to the material body, it does have an oblique reference to the path of devotional service. Therefore, these things may be called nitya, even though in themselves they are not really nitya. Such a useless is called upachar, a figure of speech.
Is he talking about Brahma Gayatri Mantra?
Yeah, because nitya karma is talking about, it's the nitya karma of a Brahman. Mm-hmm. Like that. The word nitya karma can be applied truthfully only to Krishna prema, pure love for Lord Krishna. The word nitya karma can be applied truthfully only to the realm of the spirit. When the activities of this material world are used for advancement in spiritual life, those activities may be called nitya karma. There is nothing wrong with that usage. However, one who sees the truth does not call these activities nitya, eternal. He prefers to call them naimittika, temporary. It is not really true that the words nitya karma and naimittika karma It is not really true that the words nitya karma and naimittika karma may refer to materialistic activities. So here is that, because the whole discussion is on the scriptures Varnashram Vaidhi. That's how it came out. The description originally started, because the question was brought up that how is it that we understand that the various activities can be performed by the Vaishnavas, and they can do all kinds of activities. But factually, things like being guru and things like initiation, installing deities, sitting on the Vyasasana, these kind of things, that should be reserved for those who are born in Brahmin families. In answer to that, then the points have been brought up about nitya activities, naimittika activities, or occasional activities, and then the whole Varnashram has come. So here, when they say nitya in the scriptures, when dealing with Varnashram, nitya means daily, what you do every day, and naimittik means occasionally. Like that. It's sometimes done, sometimes not. So then it's being pointed out that actually nitya can only refer to the activities of the soul, because everything in the material world is temporary, therefore it's all naimittika, occasional. It's only while one is in the material world it's performed, or when one's in material consciousness it's performed. But once one comes to the transcendental platform, then the activities of the soul are, that is nitya. So then you get this point, then is actually when they say nitya karma,
then we see that these activities, they are indirectly talking about transcendental activities. This aspect is there. So this like the chanting of the Gayatri Mantra, then is meant to actually invoke the transcendental platform. But most people won't use it for that. They'll use it for worshipping the sun, or at best to get to the Brahman platform. So no karma is nitya, it's all temporary. But when karma is used for the purpose of attaining nitya, then that brings one forward. One develops from that knowledge, understanding, and from that then one is able to progress farther, to have that understanding, to surrender to bhakti. So that is the actual meaning of the nitya for us. So in that way, if it's connected to Krishna, so it's karma yoga, then the word, use of the word nitya is fine. But otherwise, then everything in this material world is temporary. That is the point being made here. So there's always this, many times we find that there seems to be a contradiction. There's never contradiction in the scriptures. It appears that way because of the application or the usage. Like you'll have a principle, but then according to its usage, then it'll be termed in one way or another. So sometimes you have common terms, but it seems that the activities or something is different. Principle will be the same. So that is the point here. So you have this overlap of definitions in the material world, then definitions in the spiritual world. And then you have, if the material world is used to in pursuit of the spiritual perfection, the spiritual platform, then those same spiritual terms can be applied to it. It's a very essential point to understand, because otherwise a lot of confusion gets made. Is that sometimes we'll consider that the material activities are, if we say, you should wear, a dhoti, you should follow, we have things like getting up in the morning, and following some principles and things of etiquette, then some may say, well, we chant, we're devotees, these aren't so important. The most important is developing love for Krishna. Why you're so stuck up in these, secondary rules? At the same time, many times, you will find in the same breath, then they will say that you're so fanatic that, but actually all these, it's very important to economic development, taking care of the family, engaging in all these practical worldly activities, because that's the reality of life. So that is contradictory, right? Because that understanding is contradictory. Because they've just said, we don't worry about why you're quoting all this mundane stuff. We just chant Hare Krishna. At the same time, they're saying that, why we'll do all this stuff that you just talked about. We're busy engaged in mundane activities, right? So chanting Hare Krishna and then the Vaidhi is secondary. But then they'll take the activities of Vaidhi but not use them for spiritual, use them for material purposes, that's okay. We see the point. It's a very fine overlap, but it is a very common misconception. Very common misconception. This is actually the difficulty that would create the problems then associated generally in grihastha communities, because they can't balance the two. The need for following sadhana and being engaged properly in devotional activities, at the same time the need for their material progress. They have to take care of the body, their emotions, their family, and all of their needs at the same time, as then they have to spiritually advance. So then where that overlap is, then people will take it either way. So one group will take it and turn it into fanaticism, niyamagraha. The other will take it and throw it out and get niyamagraha. So that's the difficulties in those overlaps. You know, sinful activities, okay, everybody will say, yes, that should be rejected. Chanting Hare Krishna, you know, and that everybody will agree with. What's in between, then there's argument over. Because it's overlap. So that's this point here. It's only nitya if it's engaged in Krishna's service. And if it's not engaged in Krishna's service, it's not karma yoga, it's just karma. So this is the fine point, is that the second, because we need the activities of karma in our conditioned state, therefore there's rules applied on them so that they become uplifting rather than degrading. If one endeavors for economic development and sense gratification for the family, but it's not controlled by the Vedic injunctions, one will be degraded. That is certain. But if one endeavors for those things in connection with for Krishna consciousness, according to the rules of the Vedic scriptures, then that elevates you gradually towards bhakti. But if you regulate those activities of artha and kama simply for material purposes, that's pious. But it's mundane. You know, it's a nice piety. Nice mundane is better than sinful mundane, but it's mundane nonetheless. So that's the thing, is to be able to... Sinful is seen, totally spiritual is seen. But the pious material activities, they are not necessarily perceived in their completeness. Connected to Krishna, according to the rules and regulations, they elevate us. Connected to the rules and regulations, not for Krishna, they are pious. Not connected to the rules and regulations, it's sinful. The same activity. You have the same activity, it's not done according to Vedic description, it may degrade one. It's done according to Vedic description, it's pious. It's done according to Vedic description, but for Krishna, it becomes part of devotional service. Right? So that is it's a fine point. So if we want to be able to balance, you know, the whole lifestyle and the whole needs of a devotee community, one has to be able to see these subtleties and understand which is more direct, which is more indirect, and how to mold your life around these things. What is more gets more importance, less importance. How to actually engage in Krishna's service. You know, we say, well, I have to take care of my family and make money, but how do you do that? There has to be some direction if we're going to get benefit from it. Otherwise, what's the use of just taking care of material needs that are simply going to increase the desire for materialism? And that means increasing one's needs, increasing one's endeavor. What's the use? We've been doing that since time immemorial. The dogs and animals are doing that. You know, everybody's doing that. So it's nothing special. It's nothing glorious like that. It's said in the Bhagavatam, in the 12th canto, that in the future, if someone can simply maintain their family, they're considered to be a greatly pious person. Very glorious. Like that. But if we want to be... So we can do that. We can do that. But then, by whose definition is it glorious? That is the question. So some people, a situation that we have, they may say it's useless. We say, you know, for one person it says, I want my kids to get a good education, so I'm sending them to a nice, you know, reputed government school, like that. Someone else who is more concerned will say, what, you don't care for your kid? You're sending him to a government school? Why are you not sending him to a private school? Right? And then another person will come along and say, what, you're sending him to a private school? Like that, and what do they care? Why you're not doing homeschooling? So it's like, whatever, and then so you're doing homeschooling, you know, you don't want your child to get a broader experience of life and all that, instead of just being cooped up in the house. So what is the standard? Right? There's unlimited standards, according to how many combinations of material modes there are. Technically there's 8,400,000 combinations. So there's that many standards. Then there's Krishna's standard. So that's the choice, is do we want to fall into the thing, the thinking that our standard is the real standard, is the unique standard, is the special standard, or is it Krishna's standard? Then we get this definition that when it's connected to Krishna, then it's nitya. Then it's useful. It has some substance. Because otherwise it's illusion. You have something of this world, and we say it's valuable, but if it's not connected to Krishna, it's temporary. So what is its real value? So if we're endeavoring for the upliftment of the soul, then we have to have, the soul is substance. So that means the endeavor has to be substance. Otherwise, then the endeavor, if it's not substance, then what is it doing for the soul? Okay, great. You know, you raised a family, you took care, they grew up, they went out, they did whatever they're going to do. So now what? Now you'll be written down in the annals of history. Let me come forward. Leave that space of Sadhusa. Annals of history as a, you know, great, wonderful householder who sent his kid through the regular government school and, you know, paid the mortgage and, you know, fed the family until they got big enough that they went off and, you know, you never saw them again. You know? Is that something special? No. It may be a need. There may be that desire in the heart left from being in the material world for so long that the need for having family interactions, that taking care of them and all that is important. Yes. So it should be done. But now the question is, this is the choice. Do we do it connected to Krishna so that there's upliftment? Or do we do it not connected to Krishna and it's just like every other face in the world? So then that is the question. Whose opinion is valuable? Krishna's opinion? Or just the opinion of the particular mass that we accept? We say, everybody says. Who is that everybody? Right? The man riding by, you know, the Hell's Angel on the Harley Davidson, he's saying, you know, is the, you know, the head of the, you know, New York Philharmonic, he's saying, you know, is the, you know, popular musical band, that's what they're singing about. I mean, which is it? You know, Shakespeare talks about it, or, you know, who talks about it? So we'll say, okay, this particular group of people, you know, that I kind of value their opinion, they're saying. Okay, but that's one small group out of a larger group in one country, and that one country is just a country in so many countries. So therefore, it's this common thing. Somebody will be thinking something. And they say, here, what is this? You know? Then they'll go and talk to one other person. And that one other person agrees with them. And then what's the next thing they say? Everybody says. They've talked to two people, themselves and one other. But everybody's saying, the whole community's saying. And if you check, the whole community's not saying, those two people are saying. Yeah, maybe if you talk, maybe another third or fourth person. But it's a very, who we value means I have an idea. Who am I going to talk to? Someone I don't like or someone I do like? And why do I like them? Because nature is similar. So then naturally they may have the same opinion. So then, in my group, everybody says the same. So that's the world, because that's my world. My world is myself, my family, and these, you know, five friends. You know, and parts of their family. You know, so that means a total of, you know, 10, 15 people. You know, out of a community of, you know, 700 or 1,000. But because that's my world, then everybody says. And then somebody else, there's another world, there may be more. They may have 50 people in their little circle of friends. But they say, we don't care. What do they know? Because they're not in our circle. So the whole thing is if we bring it in line with what Krishna says, then there's a common platform in which all spheres of existence can relate. Everybody can work on this common thing. So this point then becomes very important if we want to actually successfully deal with this material energy and have ourselves uplifted rather than just caught up like that. So it's even though it's a simple point, it's a very important point like that. Any questions or something on this, or we'll move on? Yes.
You are a devotee, automatically is accepting a Brahmana position or a teacher in the society. Automatically should depend on the society. Looks like Srila Prabhupada wanted in that way. So in what moment the so-called desire for economic development is really needed for a family who is depending on the society?
See, so you have a dual thing happening at once. Is you have the nature of the soul. Because the nature of soul is automatically transcendental. Like we see the residents of Vrindavan. No, they're a cowherd community, but the qualities they have are all of the topmost brahminical standard. You know, topmost. Like that. Even beyond. Beyond to the, you know, the Paramahamsa stage. But they're just taking up the duties of, you know, grihastha, you know, vaishyas, you know, and the most prominent of them are the gopis, you know, young girls. So then we see is that the nature of the soul is automatically on that platform. Then you have the aspect of that devotee. So he's automatically a Brahman by accepting Brahman. Brahman, one who, what is it? What is that verse? Brahman? What? Brahman? Janati Brahmana. Yeah. So one who understands Brahman is a Brahmana. So therefore Vaishnavas understand Brahman because they know who Brahman is. It's Krishna. So therefore every devotee is a Brahmana. By basically their consciousness and endeavor. But at the same time, is we may find the conditioned nature of the particular kind of mind, intelligence, ego, and body is suited to, you know, the various aspects of the varnashram, various ashrams or various varnic duties. Therefore, one has to balance these two. That's the thing. If one can stand more on just the aspect of identifying with Krishna and I'm a servant of Krishna, then it doesn't matter what the conditioned varna is, one can act on the brahminical platform. But many times we see is unless one has come to a serious degree of advancement like that, means the madhyama can get by to some degree like that because he can work on, basically he can get by because he's following the process of naishkarmya. So he's performing the duties but not expecting result. So that's necessary for temple life. If you want to be dependent upon the temple, then one has to be able to perform unattached work. That you perform your work and you're not expecting anything for it. You know, after 20 years you don't say, where's my house, where's my recognition, this, like that. So you're not worried about security and gain. But if there is those, how you say, if there's a need to be able to call it your own, like that, in a, you know, in an expansive way, then the tendency is then one has to, because one, if one considers it oneself, that means the work is yourself. So that's why then it's necessary that they don't live under the maintenance of the temple, because they think the work is theirs, so therefore the result is theirs. But temple work is Krishna's work and the result is Krishna's. So those who can work like that, they live in the temple, and those that don't, better they live outside. But it's not because they live outside that it is also not progressive.
It's just my plastic
bottle. Oh, okay. It's also not that it's not progressive. It should be progressive because whatever they're doing, they're connecting it to Krishna according to the direction of scriptures. Because when you fall down, when you enter into the area of
independence
what the varnashram duties for yourself, it's completely based on rules. When you get into naishkarmya, then the rules are relaxed a little bit. But what happens is we cheat, right? We cheat. We want to be able to do our own work, the result is ours, but not follow the rules. So this is called sinful life. Like that, you know, because it's natural. Those from you know, that don't follow the Vedic culture means sinful. There's not another definition. You may be pious within sinful, just like amongst thieves, you have an honor amongst thieves. Okay, the five of them work together to, you know, steal the money. So then amongst them, they expect each one to be honest and not steal from that for themselves and not give the others. They expect that everybody will nicely, you know, in a very nice, moral, pious way, that they will divide it up amongst themselves and each one will get whatever was agreed to. But if they cheat each other, that's considered amongst thieves bad. He cheated me. Right?
Like the mafia.
Yeah. So that's the thing, is that it's sinful. The whole platform is sinful, though within it there might be some little bit of morality and, you know, consideration and all these things, but generally it'll be based on this profit and law. I'm willing to not steal the whole thing from you guys, because in the future we'll be working together. So in the long run, I will get more profit. I could steal it all now, then I have four other enemies, and then I have to do things alone. Five of us work together, it's more economically viable. So though it appears that there's some piety to it, it's actually only for their own personal, their own selfish gain. So the culture that is, when it is not really connected properly with Krishna's or God's instructions, then we see, even though it appears pious, it's not actually. It's not very glorious. Maybe more sophisticated, it's better than just completely anarchy. That's there. But it still doesn't really take on the proper mood until religiosity that is given by the authorized scriptures and authorized teachers, like that. Then it starts to. And then within that, then the Vedic is the most complete. Because it completely sees that God is introduced in every aspect of life. While we see other scriptures introduce God, but only in certain parts of life. Right? You think of God, you pray to God, okay, once a week, you know, seriously. Then, you know, possibly every night before you take rest. You thank God for the food you got. You know, if there's a really serious calamity, you may think of God. You know, and if the problem goes away, then we're thankful to God for that moment. Then we forget. It means the rest of the time, if we're not God conscious, that's fine. Like that. You know, it's good enough just this much. So if you add that all up, you get some hours in a week. You know, 4 or 5 hours in a week maybe. But the Vedic culture is, the idea is it should be 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Therefore, it's more complete. It's the religious process that is revealed in the Vedic literatures is the most complete. Like that. And other revelations are giving parts of that. Simply. They're simply giving parts of it. Depending upon the time, place, and circumstance, one aspect will be brought out, or another aspect will be brought out, depending upon the people. So, the whole idea is one sees one's conditioned nature. If one has more desire, then one should be honest about it, that they have the desire. Don't say, everybody has desire. No. That's Freud's idea. You know, but that's not the Vedic idea. It's like Freud said, you know, everybody is thinking that the men are thinking they'd like to have sex with their mother. That's the whole basis of one of the principles of you know, because they like their mother, and then when they come of age, then their mother for them is the perfect woman. You know, for the daughter, the father is the perfect man. So therefore, they're thinking like that. They're looking for their mother in their wife and this and that. And Prabhupada said, maybe in your country, but not in mine. You know, so that may be the sinful, materialistic, Western approach, but it's not the Vedic approach. Vedic is very different. So in that respect, then it's not a problem. It's fine if someone does that, because then they're seeing their nature, they're seeing that the desires are more than they can fulfill in Naishkarmya. You know, in just performing unattached work, that they do have attachments that have to be dealt with. So therefore, then they perform that attached work, and then give some, purify it by giving some proportion to Krishna, and trying to do it in such a way as Krishna gives direction. Then it's fine. But if they say, no, everybody has to do that, and the people living in the temple, that they're, you know, not honest, you know, they're parasites, and then this is nonsense. This is nonsense. At the same time, those living in the temple who are performing the duties of Naishkarmya, if they're not broad-minded and understand that not necessarily everybody at the present time can work that way, and so everybody needs to be situated according to their individual, needs at present, with the idea of progressing towards the spiritual, the spiritual goal, then also that will create a problem, right? So then you get the honest, down-to-earth, practical people, and then you get the holier-than-thous. And this is the meaning of Niyamagraha. Like that. It's just a very practical thing. So it's understood that temple life, you know, is ideal for however many people can do it, but not necessarily everybody will be there. Because you have to be able to accept minimal, not be looking for economic development, be satisfied with whatever you get, because that's what I mentioned before, is a servant is satisfied with whatever he gets. He performs his duty and he receives whatever he gets. So that is the nature of a Shudra, that is the nature of a woman, that is the nature of the Brahman working for the temple, and that is the nature of the living entity in the spiritual world. And other than that, then you have Kshatriyas and Vaishyas, and Brahmins who are, performing their duties for themselves. Like that. So they feel that they are independent, and they take the role of master. Like that. But all these others don't. Like that.
Doesn't
Yeah. That's what I'm saying, is that therefore whatever Krishna provides. So it's the same mentality. It's just that it's in its conditioned form or it's in its spiritual form. So in the conditioned form, then we see that the Shudras and the women, then they act on that principle. In the progressive form, then we see the Brahmins and the Vaishnavas, then they work on the that same platform, but it's done for pleasing Krishna. Krishna is the Lord, though the other devotees are the representatives. In the spiritual world, then they're completely dependent upon Krishna. They've actually attained the perfection in that realization and that. So they're completely dependent. So we see the ones that are left out of this particular line are the conditioned Kshatriyas, Brahmins, Kshatriyas, and Vaishyas. Like that. Shudra by definition is dependent. Woman by definition is dependent. So that leaves Brahma, Kshatriyas, and Vaishyas. Now those who then see themselves actually as Vaishnavas who are working on the platform of Nishkarma come into the same mentality but now on a higher level. Like that. And so that means any Brahman, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra. I mean, Shudra is going to be doing that work, but at the same time it's a difference between what his mentality is. He's serving and he's getting, and satisfied, and he sees that as I'm doing my work for the boss and I'm getting from the boss, or I'm doing my work for Krishna and I'm receiving what Krishna sends, though the medium may be the boss. So one can see it on two different levels, and then there's the perfection, the level of perfection. So there's the conditioned level, the progressive level, and the perfect level, like that. So the upper two are Naishkarmya. Like that. It means that one is performing the activities for a higher purpose. It may be in the beginning it's for liberation, as we mature more, than it's for Krishna. like that, and we're getting a spiritual taste out of it. In the perfectional stage, then it's just for Krishna. And however happy he wants to make us, that's what makes us happy. Our happiness is however much happy he wants to make us. You know, if he wants to make us unhappy, that makes him happy, then that's the happiness we want, is being unhappy for Krishna. Like that. So it's a fine thing. So it's necessary. But at the same time, it must be seen, when the knowledge must be there. Because if jnana's not coming, means karma is not being performed properly. Because karma will give jnana. Unattached karma automatically gives jnana. You know, jnana and vairag automatically come from detached work. You're detached. By performing it, the detachment grows. And because of that detachment, that situates one more in goodness, there's more knowledge than is you perceive the world better. You perceive it deeper. Does that make some sense? Yeah. So.
You mentioned the Naishkarmya. When we are on the platform of Naishkarmya, or someone is on the platform, the rules relax.
Yeah. Means one follows the rules, but one is not as bound by the rules. But the thing is generally what happens is the people that have material desire don't want to follow the rules. And the people that don't have the material desire don't mind following the rules. Like that. So this is the problem. That's why the rules are so much, in the beginning, rules are stressed. Vaidhi sadhana is stressed. Because in the beginning of devotional service, the conditioned nature is very prominent. The needs of the conditioned nature means the results are very important. So therefore then, according to the rules, then we engage in the transcendental activities according to the rules, because otherwise we just do it any way we like. You know, we'd stay up all night, you know, reading and sleep all morning. Get up at noon for lunch, you know, like that. You know, so it means if it was up to us, who knows what we would do. So therefore, the rules are given to see that the body is engaged, you know, and then slowly, then we'll catch the mind, intelligence, the ego, all these things, and then engage those in Krishna's service. So now the ego can be, I'm servant of Krishna, which is the most easy and direct. Or it can be, I'm servant of Krishna, but I have this conditioned nature, therefore I'm doing the activities of a Kshatriya or a Vaishya or a Brahmin or a Shudra. So you may have that the eternal nature and the temporary nature. Both. So when both are running simultaneously, then rules automatically apply. The rules are for the conditioned nature, to see the conditioned nature is engaged. If one is not attached to the rules, then the broadness of the rules is less, because you're dealing with less than material energy. Or your involvement in it is less. So you may be doing a lot of work in the material world, but your involvement in the material world is less. You're in the world, but not of the world. Right? But as you deal with the world, to that expanse that you deal with it, and you are interested in the results of that for your own needs to some degree, then the rules expand, the more things you take. You don't have a house, you don't have to follow any rules for taking care of a house. You have a house, you have to follow the rules. Right? You have a wife, then you have to follow the rules, how to deal with one. You have a child, you have to follow the rules for that. You have a mother and father, you have to follow those rules. You have money, you have to follow those rules. You don't have any of that, then you don't have to follow those rules. That's what I'm saying, is that it relaxes. Because then there's no need, you don't have the thing that the rules... The rule is about the things of this world. When the living entity involves himself in the material energy, then there's rules how to do it. Because it's Krishna's material energy. Right? We're God. Okay. So, since we're thinking, I am God, so, okay. Then that's... It's not good, but okay. So then Krishna is looking at it like this. You want to be God? Okay. So then, this is how you do it. Okay, now God, he gets up in the morning and he respects his mother and father. Okay, so if you want to be God, then when you're in this material world, then you're going to get up in the morning, you're going to respect your mother and father. Right? Now, God, before he eats, he washes his hands and mouth. So you want to be God here? Okay, no problem. But then before you eat, you wash your hands and mouth. Right? And then after eating, then God washes his hands, feet, and mouth again. So then you want to be God in this material world? Okay, this is how you do it. And if you don't want to follow this, then you just, you're doing, God will do it this way, you want to do the opposite. So fine, you do that. But just reverse the order of the letters in the word. That's all. And don't say you're God, just accept that you're dog. You know? Dog doesn't respect his mother and father. Dog doesn't wash before or after he eats. You know, dog doesn't do a lot of things. They're very free and independent and do whatever they like. Like that. So that's where it comes from. The living entity is here because he wants to be God. So then God's very kind and he teaches you how to be God. You know? So that's the thing. Is if we want to, the results are ours. The results are never ours. The results belong to Krishna. But because of our attachment, we feel, this is my family, my money, my place, my this, my that. So okay, so that's there. No problem. But then you should do it how God says you should do it. You know, it means, you know, this is your family. Okay, then you deal with your family the way God would deal with the, with a family. Does that make sense? Like that. So that's what it is. But even that's not enough. That's why Krishna doesn't say, just do it how he says it should be done. He says, do it for me. Do it. Do the activities with detachment, with knowledge. But for him. Because then that makes the difference. Otherwise, then you do it according to the rules, but even the atheists do that. Sukracharya also engages Bali Maharaj according to the rules. Okay. So then, you know, what's the problem? You know, Hiranyakashipu also follows the rules of materialistic life and sends his kid to the Gurukul. You can't get a more gross materialist than him. Someone who's more engaged in the material energy than him. And does he homeschool his kid? No, he knows it's a useless, stupid system. So therefore he sends his kid to Gurukul. You know, of course, he ensures that the quality of the teachers in that are good. You know? But the point is he's not a fool. He knows that if you don't follow the Vedic system, you're not going to get any prosperity at all. Like that. So therefore, we see that the rules and regulations are meant for those who want to be engaged in the necessities of this world. But otherwise, then why be there? Like that. So that is the... Yeah, that is the importance of them. But as one becomes more and more dependent upon Krishna and less on the material energy, then the importance of those rules decreases because you're following the original purpose of the rule, to please Krishna. So therefore, the amount of rules and the strictness of the rules for such a person is less. But he's on that platform. Right? Otherwise, then anybody, how do you check? You check and see, is the knowledge and detachment coming? If it's not, then the rules should be in place. If it is, then the rules are there, one follows, but it's not as strict. Does that make sense? So that's honesty. Not saying that whatever one's mind desires, that's honesty. Whatever one's mind desires, then everybody else naturally is thinking the same thing. You know, so it's different. Okay? You had something? That was taken care of that? Or?
It's a little bit different. Is there something you said about that if you... You work about
detachment, and when you execute duties, then it brings detachment. Something about this, but I wonder if you can say something more.
Means see, when you perform an activity, then it brings results, right? Everything brings results. So the bring result is a process, right? So then there's a seed, there's a plant, and there's the fruit, like that. So now this plant, when you perform an activity, it produces more seeds. So therefore, then if you perform spiritual activities, means then that seed is the desire to do it again. Right? So when you take one of those desires and you act on it, it sprouts it. So the sprout will turn into the plant, which will create the situation, and it will give you the fruit. Like that. So then you have the sprout, you have the kutaj, you have the plant, which is the what do you call that? Phulan mukha. And then you have prarabdha, which is the result. But it produces another bij to do it again. You've done the activity and you are favorably disposed towards it.
Yeah.
It produces the desire to do it again. So whatever you do, it will produce the desire to do that activity again. So if you do spiritual activities, you want to do more spiritual. If you do material, you want to do more material. Right? So if you perform something in detachment, it naturally creates the desire for more detachment. If you do something in attachment, it creates more attachment. Therefore, we perform the activity of attachment with detachment. That means then, in this world, we become detached from it. So we can work in the world because we've worked, so therefore the desire to work remains. But the detachment grows. Therefore, then you can perform activities in Yukta Vairagya. Does that make some sense? Yeah. So that's the process. That's the process we use for freeing ourselves from the material contamination. Is we perform the activities of our conditioned nature, but without the desire for the results of that. So the only attachment is that we like to perform those particular activities, which is natural. It means the mind and intelligence and senses that we have are due to our particular conditioning, and they are of a particular nature that will like to be engaged in a particular way. So since we're associated with them, we feel more comfortable engaging them in that way. But the results of that, that's not for us, that's for Krishna. So when we do it and the result is for us, then that is not as mature a position.
What about, is it possible, what about, let's say, spiritual activities? You know, I don't know, like book distribution is one of them. Let's say book distribution.
Mm-hmm.
So, since maybe the consciousness of the conditioned soul is still conditioned, he may try to do these activities, but still there are attachments there, who give difficulties in performing the activity. So, how? So this is not a conditioned activity in itself.
It's not a condition, but that's why you see that the person won't be doing it after some time.
If
he's doing it for spiritual purposes, you can come back after 20 years and still be distributing books. If they're doing it for other purposes, you can come back after 3 years and they're not distributing books. They're selling stickers.
Is this way to develop detachment can be applied in this situation also? You think it's
it can be applied in any situation. It means why are we distributing the book?
Because it can be for many.
I'm saying there's many. So what would be some of those many?
You say that as a duty to advance in spiritual life.
Okay, so then that's a detached obligatory work. That will progress one in detachment. And other reasons?
You may do it for less, prestige or self.
Yes, and those that will then create the growth of prestige within the heart. Right? And so then okay, so for some time, yes, it's one feels satisfied that every morning that they read out the names and how many books and they say Hari Bol and beat on the drums and you feel so good. But after a while, hearing a bunch of brahmacharis do that is not so sweet. So then after a while, then you have to have something that looks a little bit better than a brahmachari to tell you that you're wonderful. You understand? So that's how it works. You can watch it. It's a scientific mechanical process. You can just watch it. Because of the need for pratishta, then it just grows like that. But because they've done book distribution, which is transcendental, they will be getting transcendental results. But at the same time, is because they're allowing these other things to grow in the heart, the weeds will overpower and they may stop doing. Understand? It's not that the book distribution they did all those years for prestige didn't get them any spiritual result. It did. But that becomes covered, or even like put on, how you say, restricted or even stopped by the immense growth of the weeds. So then those have to be attended to. So then one has to, you know, get down to his, you know, the realities of his own life. So which may not be book distribution. You know, but, you know, it may, but generally it may change to something else. Does that make some sense? So you have two things going on at once. So that's the thing. The spiritual is going on. That's why it's called yoga. Karma yoga, jnana yoga, bhakti yoga. Devotion is going on. That's the yoga. But the activity of karma, if it's not done in a detached way, it may, while purifying us, may also increase the material side. And then that may overshadow everything else. Or the jnana, if it's not done for Krishna, then that also then may overshadow. So that's why it's very, the spiritual path is very fine. Is that you have to stay right in the middle. It doesn't go too much this way, too much that way. Then then you're situated in yoga. Like that. Does that make sense? Anything else in this?
Is it always possible to classify somebody as a Kshatriya or a Brahmana? Because sometimes natures can be mixed, isn't it? Like you would have.
Yeah, yeah. It means we're just giving that as a general idea. You know, a general idea.
So how do we classify a person who has mixed nature? Is he predominance?
Mixed, it depends upon what it's a mix of. But technically, mixes, then they fall into a broad general category called Antija. Like that. Vana Shankar, like that. If it's a close mix, then it's similar to. If there's just one degree of difference in between the mother and father, then it just takes the nature of the mother. Like that, unless it's that's if it's analoma. That means analoma means with the hair, with the what do you call it?
The grain,
right? Pratiloma means backwards, against. So if the mother is lower than the father, the child has the nature of the mother, the mood of the father, the nature of the mother. So if you have a Brahmin father, Kshatriya mother, by nature there'll be Kshatriyas, but with Brahminical kind of a spirit, like that. So they're not classified, they're mixed, but they're considered a good mix. I mean, it's an okay mix. They're called Anantaras, like that. So they're not a different species. They're considered Kshatriyas, but they may be a little bit septic, like that. That's the inclination. Like that. Of course, what they actually come out to be is another thing. But just by birth, this is the natural thing. If it's 2 degrees, Brahmin father and a Vaishya mother, then it's a different species. It's not a Brahmana, it's not a Vaishya, it's its own species. Like that. You know, and if it's 4 degrees, the Brahman father and Shudra mother, then it falls out. 4 degrees always falls out of the Varnashram system. Like that, because the mix is bad. Like that, they fall below. Like that, and then reverse, then it's similar but more critical, because then the it's like if you have a lower nature with a higher spirit, that's not bad. You have a Shudra that has a more progressive mentality, that's fine. But if you have a Brahman with a low mentality, or Kshatriya with a lower mentality, a Vaishya with a low mentality, that's worse. Right? A Sattvic Shudra won't make much trouble. A Tamasic Brahman will. So that's why Pratiloma is then considered not as good. Like that. Because you're never sure quite of how the mix will work. So that's the science. But that's if they're pure. Then there's mixes of mixes. So now let's say you have a Brahmin person is married a Shudra woman. Then they're going to get a Nishada. Right? So now if a Nishada marries a Nishada, they'll have a Nishada for a kid. So it maintains. At least they maintain the tradition. But if that Nishada marries a Shudra, you know, it mixes again, then you get a Swapacha, which is then even lower. Swapachas are dog eaters. Nishada is just a forest dweller. You know, a little wild, but forest dweller. But Ekalavya, he was a Nishada. So then, but if they marry a Shudra again, so now you have a double dose of Shudra and only one dose of Brahman, then they become Swapacha. Like that. And then if that marries a Chandala, then, you know, even the outcasts consider that person an outcast. even they won't go near the person. They won't marry into those families. Like that. So that's So therefore, the real thing is just see what is there in the nature, engage those aspects. Because when there's a mix of natures, it's hard to decide what you are. Because you'll be a mix of two. So therefore you may be engaged in both of them. But then you must engage in each of them according to the rules of that nature. And when Shudra activities are done, one has to have the mentality of a Shudra. Meaning that one works for the benefit of whoever you're working for and is satisfied with whatever they get in return. You can't demand, but I'm a Brahmin, you know. In the temple you do the morning puja and then during the day you go out and work at the bank. When you're at the bank, then you have to deal with the boss as a Shudra. And then when you're in the temple doing the puja, then you're gonna act according to that. Then you have to act as a Brahmin, you can't act as a Shudra. You know? And then with time, one may be more comfortable in one or the other. Like that. That's interesting. But the main thing is where it's not important so much the perfection of the Varnashram duties. The importance is that we are trying to develop our affection for Krishna. And since we are in the material world, in a conditioned state, that's what we have. That is our tools. So simply, we are trying to get the tools engaged in Krishna's service. That's the perfection. It's not perfecting the tools. But naturally, by using those tools, we will develop expertise. You know, but expertise that is not geared for Krishna's satisfaction. By the expertise, then with our conditioned nature we can get a better result for Krishna, then that's fine. You know, if one has the nature to improve, that's meaning one's ability. You have a nature, but you also have ability. That's the work. It said nature and work. nature work qualities. So the nature is there, but the work is then what aspect of that nature you're going to work with and to what depth or degree. You know? So then, if you have the nature to go deeper into it, very, you know, naturally, and one can become more expert, then that's fine, as long as you're doing it for Krishna. But just to become expert, not for Krishna, is no glory. There's so many like that. And even we think we're so great, and we read about in the histories of other persons who are so much greater. And even they died, they moved on. Nothing was special, you know. Where is Yayati now? Where is Kuru? You know, where are all these great kings? Harishchandra. You know, so for us here still one is going to move on. So material perfection doesn't exist. Material perfection means engaging material energy in Krishna's service. That's material perfection. So to that degree that you are engaging in it in Krishna's service, to that degree it's perfect. When it's fully engaged, it's fully perfect. Even if externally it's not done so well. Does that make sense? Yeah. So, therefore, this study is there so that we're aware that there's a difference between us and the mind, and the ego, and the intelligence, and the senses, and the material energy. Right? That we're able to see all these things, and we see it connected with God. Right? Means, sambandha jnana means three things. Means there's knowledge of God, knowledge of the soul, knowledge of the material world. When you have these three, then you have relationship. Right? Then you can call it real relationship. Material knowledge and material relationships means there's us and the material energy. So it's not complete relationship. It's not complete knowledge. And neither is a complete relationship. That's why there's no satisfaction. And that's why it changes. But when it's us, the material energy, and Krishna, then it actually becomes real relationship and it never changes. Right? The body may change, situations change, but us as Krishna's servant never changes. So then it becomes substance. So that is when we say relationship, that's the only relationship. So when we see ourself and our car and Krishna, then it becomes real. Ourself, our wife, Krishna. Ourself, our house, Krishna. Ourself, our money, Krishna. And we work within that, then it becomes spiritual. Then you have relationship. It was just us, our wife, us, our money, us, our car. Then it's illusory. And there is no relationship. Right? We think there's a relationship, but there's nothing happening. That's why people, you know, every year, 2 years, have to change their car, change their wife, change their house, change their everything. Because they don't see there's no relationship. It's material energy, it's just dead matter. Does that make some sense?
You're speaking of sambandha with the three things.
Yeah. So I was mentioning that is because that's what we're discussing here. What is varnashram, basically, is part of the Abhideya, but if you really want to understand it, you have to understand sambandha jnana. Is that there's ourself, the particular varna or ashram duties that is there, and then there's Krishna. Krishna is not part of it, varna ashram is not real. It can't be perfected. And the results are simply going to be temporary. But if we see ourselves in connection with that and Krishna, so therefore we're following varna ashram how Krishna says it should be followed. For pleasing Krishna. Means, in other words, varna ashram is the medium we use for serving. You know, at least at some levels. Besides, it means that's not all we're doing. In this age, by varna ashram, you're not going to become perfect. Therefore, it's just an auxiliary to the Sankirtan mission and the deity worship. Right? Just for social interaction and, you know, family interaction, economic development, sense gratification. Therefore, it's there. But only as an appendage to the Pancharatrika and the Bhagavat paths. like that. So if one sees that, then it becomes perfect. So that's real perfection on that platform. Otherwise, it's no perfection. No. So that's the difficulty, is that this, if this is not understood, then you fall back into that trap of Niyamagraha. Those who take, yes, we have to follow Varnashram, but they don't add Krishna to it in reality, then they're just thinking that the Varnashram is going to make everything perfect. Varnashram will never make everything perfect. Varnashram connected to Krishna, that will help, because it's service. The Varnashram is own, then no, it's not. Plus, what are you dealing with? Right? If you're dealing with mixed castes, how are you going to make Varnashram? You're dealing with Vaishnavs, then Vaishnav is above the system. Therefore, then they can, by their good qualities, fit into the Varnashram system. Right? Otherwise, the mixed castes, how they'll mix them. What was that point? It's about Krishna being there. So it's a tool for interaction like that. So in the beginning, it's very important for the neophyte. It's less important for the madhyam. But it's still there. It's still followed. And the uttama for preaching will also follow. Right? Dasyam means serving the Lord, basically, by engaging the Varnashram system. That's one definition. Another definition simply means rendering service in that servant mood. Like that, yes.
In Narada Muni, I think, is in the fifth canto, he said that describing the glories of Bharatavarsha. The glories of Bharatavarsha is that the people follow Varnashram. And even sometimes gets obscure, it's easy to revive on this planet.
Mm-hmm.
He says like that.
Yeah. That's nice. That's a good point. Yeah, because human life means Varnashram. Like that. But we're interested in human life as a tool. Human life is a better tool than animal life for Krishna consciousness. Because human life means you're conscious. Animal life means you're not conscious. You're only conscious of what's connected to your senses or your particular desires. But human life means you're connected to what's beyond that. Because if you can follow all those different rules, it means you're conscious of everything. Right? You're conscious. So that's what the rules are for, to make you conscious, that's all. They're not for some other purpose.
Exactly is what he said. He said, it's because here it's easy to become Krishna conscious. Varnashram can be revived. The heavenly planets, there's not so much Varnashram.
They don't have to follow they follow Varnashram, but they're not restricted by the rules of piety here. Therefore, you see, is Arjuna, he respects Urvasi because she's, you know, way back in the line, and she's married one of the kings, and so the line's coming down. So she's like great, 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 great grandmother, you know? And she's saying, you know, up here we don't work on those principles. Like that, but he wouldn't budge from it, you know? Like that. So they do follow. You know, that's why you see when the Harinam was going on, then Narad Muni in the previous life, you know, two previous lifetimes back, as the Gandharva, he got himself into trouble because he wasn't following, you know, the basic principles. Like that. But so much detail, they don't have to worry about it because they're just enjoying the fruits. So they only have to follow a certain amount that they'll maintain the fruits and they'll gradually be exhausted. But if they don't follow, then it will destroy the fruits. So something they have to follow. But for the human beings, they have to follow very much because then it will produce the results. Like that. And it's just like to cook, there's more rules than to, you know, put it in your mouth. You know, to enjoy it, you know, there's a few rules. You know? And it, you know, like that. But you also notice it, you know, it's like you work all day and then in 15 minutes you eat it all. So think about it, that's what you get here. Okay, so then we'll end here.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jai Nitya Gaura Vaishnava. Yeah, I mean, the point is all it was is that when there's less time, then don't shove questions in. The question means asking questions is okay, it's good, it means intelligence is working. But when we're just about to say, you know, okay, so that's it, and then at that time to, you know, say, no, one last question, that's not nice. That's the point. But in the course of the conversation to ask, then that's expected, that's good. That's a sign of a good listener. At the same time, as we should see that it's, you know, connected to and relevant to the audience, you know, connected to the subject, relevant to who's there. Like that. That's all. So, you know, and then we have the questions, then we see. And another time, maybe it'll come up if it's not exactly connected to the topic or it's not relevant for the audience. So I was only talking about when we're trying to end, and then we just kind of like stuff in, a, you know, that's all. Because then the time goes over and then our whole schedule gets messed up.
The nature of the question?
Nature is okay, but the point is sometimes it may be irrelevant, so therefore, you know, because...
Thank you.
Okay, you know, like you're saying about this city, but who in the spheres that you talk to is the discussion relevant?
Generally, there's so much talk going on. I mean,
so much talk, but that doesn't mean it's relevant.
Unless you know the conclusion.
You got 3-5 3-year-olds together, and they found themselves a Playboy magazine. Is it relevant?
No.
Then? That's the point. So just because they want to talk about it doesn't mean they should be. What's the why? What's their qualification? What are they going to do with it? They have this knowledge, great. More than just, what is it? I've heard about it, what is it? Oh, okay, so that means when we come to the Brahma-Bhuta platform, as devotee of Krishna, we've been following in the footsteps of the residents of Vrindavan and the, you know, with a particular, desire, and so then now that desire then fructifies in the form of a particular spiritual form. Then, because we are on that platform of realization, then through meditation we can use that body in service, Krishna's service in the spiritual world. That's it. But that means you have to be Brahma Bhuta, and you have to have come to the platform of Bhava. So you're Brahma Bhuta by purification, and you're on the platform of Bhava by advancement. So your platform of never forget Krishna is on the platform of Bhava Bhuta, Brahma Bhuta. Your platform of always remember Krishna is on the platform of Bhava. When these two are met, you know, which will be, you can't, like that. For us, we won't have one without the other. You know? So therefore, it means, therefore, then, I just say you can have Brahma Bhuta without Bhava if you haven't cultivated Krishna consciousness, but you can't have Bhava without Brahma Bhuta. So as devotees, then they have to come to that intimate platform. Then they can go more into the details. Otherwise, what's the need? You know?
The confusion arose because I heard a senior speaker say that even before Anartha Nivritti is possible. So it's
okay. No, it means before Anartha Nivritti, no. See, it's... One has to understand what they're saying. Is anartha nivritti, until anartha nivritti is completed, one factually can't really operate it. Right? You understand? Like that. You know, it's just like before a certain age, a child can't walk. They can move their legs around, but they can't walk. After a certain age, they can't even get off their back. For 3 months, the kid cannot get off his back. He just lays on his back. After 3 months, then he can figure out how to roll over. So it has to come to that. So it's just, that's all. So the whole point is that anartanivritti means that there can be an idea that one would like to do a particular activity, but, you know, that's all. But it's not so prominent in the mind. When it becomes more prominent in the mind, then yes, but that's not Sarup Siddhi. That is simply an aspect of interest in a particular kind of service to Krishna. Right? That's not Sarup Siddhi is after a sakti, or once one has attained Brahma-bhuta. That's just the science. It's just a position. Right? But Raganuga, that's another thing. That can start below that. But it's Raganuga sadhana. Raganuga sadhana is not Sarup Siddhi. And if it is, then it's called sahajya. Like that. Therefore, one never contemplates that one does the services of the transcendental people. One simply understands what they're doing and feels that this is nice service. You know? There is a, you know, attraction to those kinds of services. That's what they're talking about, not service.
Just read somewhere, Bhaktivinoda Thakur is saying that Vishnu tattvas appear only in a community where varnas and dharmas follow.
Well, that's a nice quote.
To other places, do not send Kshatriya Vaishyas.
The other places he sends Kshatriya Vaishyas.
Probably that's the reason why Lord Chaitanya came in India. He sent Prabhupada to deliver the world.
Yeah. Or you see also then, you know, Muhammad or Jesus or these persons then are sent. You know.
That's in his...
Or Buddha, Shaktivesh, because, you know, he's going to establish, he's going to destroy the culture, right? Yeah. So by definition then he couldn't stay there. That's interesting, that's nice.
Where is it from? Bhaktivinoda Thakur, in his Bengali comment on Bhagavad Gita, he wrote two commentaries. One based on Baladeva Vidya Bhushan, one based on Vishwanath Chakravarti. The one in which Baladeva Vidya Bhushan, when Krishna in first chapter talks of avatars, he in fact uses the Lord's terminology. He says, I appear in Vishnu Tattvas and communities where they follow Varnashram Dharma. In other places, I send my Kshatriya Vaishya avatars.
That's fine. That's fine. That's a good one. What does Mayapur want?
Looking for her mother.
Looking for her mother. I don't know. You check underneath there. Maybe she's behind the door. Maybe.
Where's Priti?
I'm just not here.
Yes.
Somehow, Kusakratas is easier to read than this one. Somehow or another. Vamana? Are we singing or we're not singing?
Means when after marriage
She accepts Saint Barnabas. Her husband,
she's okay. Basically. Because if she's really good, she'll attain that nature. Like Vishishta, I don't know if it's his...
Like
his
lady, she married Vyapati. No, that was her name, Malito. Malito. No, that Matakam.
Okay.
I don't know if this is true. This is
very... I know, Vishishta has a wife that's... I don't know.
She was Shabari, yeah? That lady, she married her Vyapati, and then she glorifies the actress in that Mataka. They say, no, Vyapati and all the good qualities.
Yeah, so if they really take up the mood to follow and all that, then actually they accept the mood of the husband, so that's automatically they become that varna.
And after we speak about Pratyaloma, if she's accepted, she's...
Well, then it may come down, but then why bother? If a Brahmin woman marries a Shudra, then she has to come down to the Shudra level. You know, the other way, Anuloma is considered good. Pratyaloma is not so good. Though it seems to be quite common.
But my question is, if she really is, she can get this mode and she is qualified to go higher, then child born...
May. If the consciousness has already gone up, I would say yes. But just automatically, no. You know, that's why also in the Vedic thing many times you see is that, you know, there's a lot of time is between marriage and when they have children. Generally there's more time, you know, unless the natures and everything is very, very good. You know. Like you see Kardama and Devahuti. So he checked her very strictly for 9 months, like that. There are so many, many situations. But yeah, then you could say that the kid would come because then she's attained that nature. It's a good point. It's a nice point. But then that's a very qualified woman to do that. You know, because most aren't really that interested. They just want to be themselves, you know. So that creates the duality in the kid. The kid can't really figure out who he is. Can you tweak this?
Also, should we say that when you get married, the vision itself, the jumper, you grow a child for at least a long time.
First, let's do these ones, this one and this one, and that will create enough light, and then we can fix it.
For a couple of days or something?
Yeah, at least for the, means from the marriage to the Dhriti Homa, those 4 days, then they have to be. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and this one. You know how to twist them?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. See, is that... Then you do this, they get sometimes too long, or maybe sometimes a bit, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So you get them, because it's touching the edge there,
mm-hmm.
So you want to take them and bend it, like that. So you can keep it, see it's below the, mm-hmm. the place,
mm-hmm.
but it's still got the height,
mm.
you know?
It doesn't touch the lip.
Yeah, it doesn't touch the lip, because when it touches the lip, that's when it drips,
mm.
you know? Mm-hmm. Also you get rid of, you know, the extra ash stuff.
Those tweezers you get in the pharmacy?
Yeah, these are forceps for, you know...
Operations,
yeah. You know, you have different lengths. This is, I think, 6-inch, which seems to be quite a good... There's also dental ones that are quite interesting, because they come along, and then they go like this and come down.
Mm.
So then they're nice for dealing with it this way, you know, or picking them up and that,
mm-hmm.
you know, this one you got to get. But for twisting it like this, I don't know if those are good. I've only seen them used, but I haven't used them.
So have you seen using them?
Shiva Maharaj uses those ones instead of these ones. The dental, they're forceps also, but they're dental forceps. Well, these are regular forceps.
It's in Hungary that he uses them?
Yeah, but I would expect it to stay in the thing. We buy these in Calcutta at medical supplies, you know, the hospitals and doctors and everybody goes.
How many is it in the boat? In the tons of languages.
Yeah. We went out and the original ones we bought like this, but then we found the other ones.
Okay.
We went to some, you just go to, there are places that sell, you know, all the hospital equipments. And you just go to those special, they're like special, the one we went to was a mix of like pharmacy and, you know, so it had medical things and medical tools. You leave that on at night? Oh, wait, it's Tulsi.
Yeah.
No, no, Tulsi is not a problem. I'm just thinking it might be uncomfortable inside the chatter. What do you do? Tulsi garlands?
You take them away. But this is the first time I'm hearing about it, so I'm...
Yeah, you can put it on the outside, or you can put it down at his feet. It means Tulsi can be left when you take off all the flowers. Tulsi can be left. It never becomes like the nirmalya that when the sun comes up, then, you know, you got problems. Like that.
What's happened with garlands in spiritual world? They're not... Because flowers, they're not dying like here.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not sure. But, you know, it's just like what happened to the grains of rice. And, you know, so it's all... They would all be, I was saying, Sunday Shakti. You know, so that somehow or another they had a way of probably...
At night they disappear.
Disappearing or something.
No, at sunrise.
Going back to the tree.
After the residence.